Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving. Living and Thriving. Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. It's Living and Thriving time, and I'm Rusty. I am so grateful to have you on today. It's a beautiful day here in Southwest Florida. The sky has this mixture of beautiful crystal clearness and this drumming up of some moisture, clouds, dark, eerie kind of tropical storm. And it's just kind of colliding in my backyard, and I'm going, ooh, I'm going to have a rainbow here in about an hour. I'm so excited. It's beautiful here. Every day it's an adventure, and every day it's sunny. And I cannot complain at all. I am super excited about Saturday. My daughter's artwork is on display in Punta Gorda, so we're going to go do that. I'm so proud of her. She has just blossomed into this amazing lotus flower. She's so funny and bright and loving and smart as a whip. Good gravy. And she's got that fresh teenage mouth too, but I can't do anything but giggle because, you know, I've got a very sharp tongue. Serpent's tongue is what they used to call me. And so I can't really say much about my child having a sharp tongue too. Today is May 2nd. And happy Ballantine to everyone, and, you know, happy spring, happy Mother's Day to those of you who are mothers. This is the month of celebration and reminder of what joys we have as parents. And I don't need a card for my daughter. I have her every single day, and she snuggles with me every morning. I don't need a reminder that I am blessed to be a mom, because she's just a cat's meow. It's also National Celiac Awareness Month. Yes, you know, gluten-free, celiac disease, autoimmune, eat right, eat healthy, be safe. That's so huge. And I will be speaking in Jacksonville May 13th. So I hope that my local friends will come and join me and, you know, nibble on some delicious gluten-free and sometimes even vegan food products that will be on display with the vendors. There's going to be beer and pizza and pasta and cookies and candies and CBD oils and all kinds of other good stuff that's gluten-free, allergy-friendly. So I'm really excited about that. And, oh, gosh, there's just so much going on in life. It's a wild ride, and all I can do is be a leaf on a river going with the flow, because, you know, I'm going to bump against some rocks, I'm going to get tangled into trees, but eventually I'll go back into the river and flow, and it's just beautiful. Life is gorgeous, and I am very blessed to be able to participate in it every day. Not everybody gets that opportunity, so count your blessings, and as I say on every show, drive 5 miles slower. When you get out of bed, take 5 more minutes to just lay in bed and appreciate the space, and get at least 5 hugs in a day. 5 is the magic number. 5 hugs a day, that's amazing. And it just raises your happiness factor so much. And laugh as much as you can, and make sure you laugh at yourself, because you know what? You're human. You're just this delicious sack of silliness and complexity, and have fun with it. It goes by really fast, so have fun with it. Speaking of having fun, I have Lola on the line, and I'm so excited about this show, because she talks about her fighting for her tits and yoga and India and, you know, living life, and I'm thrilled to learn more about her, what inspires her, and what's going to motivate her to continue her journey. So, Lola, are you out there, my friend?
I am, Rusty. How are you?
I am blessed. How are you, my friend?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm feeling really blessed to be here and blessed to be in the presence of such a wonderful leader of women.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm a messenger. So Lola, you found me, and I was so thrilled to read some of your work and learn a little bit more about you. But I really would love it if you were to tell my audience who you are, what you do, and what inspires you to be you.
Okay. Well, my name's Lola Scarborough. I live with my husband. We're empty nesters now. When I hear you talking about hugging your daughter, I'm like, oh, I wish my daughter was here to hug. She's off in L.A.
Yeah.
So I have two children, Mia and Dash, a girl and a boy, but they're grown and gone. And I own and operate a yoga studio. It's Yoga Lola Studios in Link City, Texas. I've been doing that now for almost 15 years. I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner, and Ayurveda is a type of wellness practice that is trained for by doctors in India. And so it's an amazing wellness modality. I do some life coaching. I'm also an author, as you mentioned. My book, Writing for Our Tits, is Fighting for Our Tits. I was writing for our tits, but it's Fighting for Our Tits. is a book
that was
about...
Part two. That's nice. Part two. Yeah, we get
to oh my gosh.
That's all right.
I get to talking so fast, my tongue trips over itself. And the book is about living in wellness and embracing our femininity, establishing a really good connection and a loving connection with our breasts, regardless of what happens to them. But being in awareness that, you know, there are lots of different things that we can do to bring down the opportunity for breast cancer to even happen in our lives. And the book is highly research-based. I'm a research rat. And so it tells people a lot, it tells women a lot about the different kinds of complementary modalities that they can use, as well as it's science-backed in a lot of the approaches that I suggest for avoiding breast cancer. And so that's a little bit about me. I'm an energy healer as well. When I was 12, my grandmother grabbed my hands and said, "You've got the hot hands," and she put me right to work. She was an energy healer, and so I've been doing that for most of my life. I have a BA in political science. I'm completing my PhD in comparative religion, and I'm coming out as a part of a story in another book that is being written by Casey Armstrong. The name of the book is The World's Most Amazing Women, and I was honored and blessed that he chose my story. So I will be in that book, which releases in December or January. And so, yeah, that's a little bit about me.
So you are very far out. Like, I just absolutely groove you. You're getting your PhD, you're doing this wonderful energy work, and you've written this book. Obviously, you're going to be writing two more.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What is your inspiration? What motivates you? Did you have breast cancer, or are you like most of us and have been privy to friends with breast cancer?
No, I have not had breast cancer, and, you know, my prayer is that I don't ever develop it. If you do, you haven't failed. But if you don't, then that's wonderful. But yes, as a healer, I've worked with a lot of women who have gone through breast cancer treatment, and I've seen the magnitude of suffering that it brings into their life, and I've watched some of the women that I've worked with not make it through their journey. So about 10 years ago, I was just struck with the number of women who were coming in for me to do energy work with them or life coaching or working with them privately doing yoga sessions that had breast cancer or that were going through breast cancer treatment or that were coming to me because they were trying to mitigate the effects of the treatment. And I started really researching it because it was just breaking my heart. And I got deep down into it. And so for the last 4 years, I published the book last year. I woke up and I'd tell my husband, I'd say, "I'm going to write a book." And he said, "What is it about?" I said, "I don't know yet." And then the year would pass. I'd wake up again, New Year's Day, "I'm going to write a book. What's it going to be about? I don't know." So last year I woke up December 1st and I said, I'm going to write a book, and the name of it's going to be Fighting for Our Kids, and it's going to be about how to really stack the odds in your favor and against breast cancer. And it's like, wow, okay, cool. Finally, she's going to write the book. So
right.
That's what prompted it, yeah.
What's beautiful about it is, you know, you might not necessarily have experienced the process in your personal way, but you are empathetic enough to write a book to try to help minimize other people from this. And I just high five to you. Kudos. That's some balls, baby, some balls. You know what I'm saying? It's awesome
yeah.
that you're doing that. I think it's
Thank
great.
Thank you.
What was your experience like in India? I'm dying to hear about that. That's on my bucket list.
Oh, I love India. I've been there 5 times.
Wow.
And I'm planning on going back at least another 5 and staying a really long time once I finally retire. It is a much different kind of world. And you've been exposed to a lot of things. So for you, it probably wouldn't be as much of a culture shock as it would be for someone who, you know, had been really
right.
Protected in their lives. But you go and it is there's so much sound, there's so much color, there's so much movement. And it's like stepping back in time in a lot of ways. They have the open markets where, you know, the foods are lining the streets and you see people out shopping. They go out daily and they buy their food fresh, you know, because they don't have, at least in most of the places where I went, they didn't have, you know, like grocery stores. They were the open markets. Vendors were out on the street selling street food, selling fresh vegetables. And the colorfulness of the place is just stunning. And I've been to 4 or 5 different areas in India. My favorite area is in the north around Rishikesh, Haridwar, the Himalayas, because it's a deeply spiritual area. Most of the people there are practicing Hindus. So there are always festivals going on. There are always people. You'll see masses of people. They'll stop working and they'll all start walking together in a huge group to go down to their temple to attend some sort of rite or ritual for whatever deity mm-hmm. it is that they worship in their village. And there's a connectedness to who they are that we've kind of lost, I think, as Westerners, or at least I've lost, and most people I know as Westerners have lost, because they live in a network where everyone knows everyone. There are large communities there. And you'll see people mixed in with monkeys, mixed in with cows, mixed in with bulls, mixed in with oxen, with men sitting on top of a cart piled high with sugar cane. There's smoke everywhere. It smells like cow poo all of the time because they have cows everywhere and they roam free. A lot of them do. But they pick up the manure, and the manure serves as an insulation. It serves as a glue for closing up buildings. It serves as fire fuel. So they use it for an enormous number of things. So there are cows everywhere. And like when you go to Rishikesh and you go to the market, the cows are sticking their heads into the vendor stalls and they're just everywhere. So I love the chaos of India. It kind of breaks through the orderliness of life in the West. And, you know, there's a lot of poverty there. There's a lot of suffering. There's a lot of injustices. I mean, people are there. Wherever people are, these things exist. But what strikes me about India is you can walk past someone who has almost nothing. I mean, they're sleeping on the dirt ground, and they're living in a place that they've built with sticks and plastic with a thatched ceiling over it, and they're smiling. I think because of their deep spiritual connection to their belief system, they find a sort of, a sort of peace that sort of lacks in many people and in many cultures. And, you know, if you go to someone's home and they have like 250 square feet and 5 people live there, they are proud. They are beaming because they actually, they own something that belongs to them and belongs to their family. So it's just a much different kind of culture. So,
well, my understanding is there's an extreme disconnect with, you know, having these levels, and there's certain people, certain families that are lower level than other families, and I think they're trying to smooth those lines out so that there's not such a financial disconnect. But out of everyone that I've ever met from India, they are such proud and hardworking people. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine how beautiful it is to participate in that. And I like how you say chaos, because I hear a lot about India having chaos. It's very loud and noisy and smelly.
It's total chaos.
Busy. But it seems like it's an organized chaos, and it functions rather well.
It does. You're like, the first thing you notice when you get into a taxi, people are terrified. I just, you know, I say, chant your mantra, all will be good. Say your prayers, God will take care of you. You're in India. You get into the car, and it is total
like
craziness. People are going everywhere. There's cars, there's huge buses, there are oxen, there are bicycles, there are motorcycles with five people on them, carrying the groceries or carrying lumber. You know, they use their motorcycles just like we use our cars here. It's just extraordinary what they can do. And the horns are always honking. And then a dog runs into the middle of it. And there's a monkey in the middle of it. And then there's an accident. And people get out and scream at each other, slap each other, then get back into their cars and go. I mean, it's just, it's wild. So if you're someone that's distressed by craziness, I mean, I don't think India would be a good fit for you. But if you, you know, like you said earlier, when you were introducing your show, you know, you're going to float like a leaf, right? If you can float like a leaf, if you can go with the flow, it's an extraordinary, very alive environment.
What was your original attraction to go and pursue India and to pursue yoga and just to continue with healing, the healing arts, because you have to be a special person to really want to pursue that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, 24 years ago, I was in a different place. I was a heavy smoker. I smoked 2.5 packs of cigarettes a day, whether I needed it or not. Had 10 cups of coffee a day, was always on the verge of a nervous breakdown. I was in a marriage that I wasn't happy in, and I have my two beautiful children there. But I really went through what I call first a breakdown and then a breakthrough. And as a part of that process, I joined a healing group. I've been doing healing, like I said, since I was 12. And I met a man there that was leading up the healing group. And he taught me a mantra. And learning that mantra is what eventually opened the doors to me to yoga, and then from yoga into a deep interest about India. And, you know, and I've always wanted to travel anyway, travel the world. I've been to a few other places, not as many as I'd like, because traveling is extremely expensive. But I've always wanted to travel, and I've always been very interested in esoteric information. I mean, again, because in my family, the sorts of gifts that my grandmother had were considered normal. I didn't know until I got out and got out into the world that people didn't believe in energy healing. They had negative responses to you as a result. They called you really bad names because it's more accepted now. And, you know, I have quite a large client base of people who come to me for energy work. But back then, you know, I'm 59 now. Back then, it wasn't a thing. And people thought it was the occult and working with the devil. It was just crazy. But I've always been fueled by the desire to help. I'm the oldest of eight. I come from a poverty-stricken, violent background with an alcoholic parent that married four times. So I think I was born in this world to be of support to other people. And this is just how I do it. You know, there's lots of ways to help folks, but I think we're all born to a path. And you know, when you're on the right path, when you do the work and you feel uplifted by it and energized by it, and you're willing to stand your ground and say, you know, I'm sorry that this makes you uncomfortable, that this is something that you say you don't believe in, but Jesus laid hands. There are churches where they lay hands. You know, they do it in the Catholic Church. They do it, you know, in a lot of evangelical-type churches and charismatic churches. So it is well established in our human history as something that is a benefit to the human race. So I'm like, yeah, this is what I do, and I'm proud of it. I've helped people in so many ways. And anytime I help someone, they help me. It's a mutual thing. I can't offer healing to someone and not be healed myself. It's simply not possible.
Well, and I find it very interesting as I continue my path in the healing world. It's the same process, but it's called a different name. And when we acknowledge that and we realize that healing is universal and that we
right.
do the same thing, and we just label it a different name, it becomes much easier to have the conversations with people. There's more understanding, and it's not so scary. I think there has been a lot of marketing over centuries with the churches to thwart old traditional healing methodologies because the churches wanted to have more control over that versus, you know, every grandmother, or, you know, you always had the healer in the village, and that's just the way
mm-hmm.
it's been since we lived in caves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've done a really good job at confusing that information. And now in the last 20 years, we've really enlightened and brightened and became more understanding of what we are capable of doing, what we are allowed to do by choice. And it's beautiful. The amount of healers that I have on the show is just phenomenal, from Thailand all the way to, you know, California. I've had so many people on the show that have offered a service to heal mind, body, and soul. And we need far more. I don't think there's enough in this world. But it comes with education and understanding and compassion. And I really think that we're doing a great job with opening up those lines of communication and understanding that healing is healing, period.
Right. I agree completely.
Now, the cross-cultural references I totally dig on, because I'm just 100% nerd. But gypsies and pagans and Nordic folk and Chinese and Japanese, we all do the same thing. It's just called
a different
name. We
all do the same thing.
And I love it. I love that we're becoming more open and more cross-cultural, and those lines are not as blurred as they used to be. So it must be a lot of fun for you now, 20 years forward, to see that those lines are not blurred anymore. We're opening up centers all over the world. Great.
Right. Yes, I love it. And about 5 years ago, I started running my own energy mastery training course. And over the course of 5 years, I've had somewhere in the vicinity of 60 people graduate from my program. And
wow,
you know, they come back to me and they tell me how it's changed their life. And it opens doors not only from energy healing, but into sound healing and to all different other kinds of healing modalities. It really offers the chance to expand your worldview and expand your view of what healing means and understanding the difference between healing and curing, because they're different things. They can walk hand in hand. And in fact, I would say a true cure can't be affected unless there's healing at a deeper level. But
right.
You know, but so it's wonderful to watch them, because so many people, when they come to me and they start talking about it, because we're out here in Texas, and, you know, it's a very conservative area where we live. So there's a lot of women, and mainly it's women that come to me, have these skills that they've had all their lives, and they haven't had anyone to talk to. And, you know, when they first come in and start talking to me, it's like in a whisper, because a lot of them are my age, not all of them, but a lot of them are. And then all of a sudden, you know, they find their voice. They're empowered to speak up about, yes, this is my intuition. This is what I feel is going to happen. Or, you know, this is, you know, I feel strongly that my intuition can tell me what's best for my body. You know, so it helps you. And I would say as a man as well, although I haven't, the only two men I've put through my training is my husband and my son. but I would say that even for men, it helps you find your power, because there's a deep power in connecting into your intuition and connecting into your inner God self, where you can hear your own voice and you don't always have to look to the outside for guidance and direction. When something in your life is going wrong, you can sit with your heart. You can take that moment in meditation, or when you're in a healing session, and you can let your intuition come up, and you can share that information. And I believe that, you know, Western tech. Oh, go ahead, Rusty.
No. I was just going to say, I think that is unveiling in our society now. We've had such a heads down, laser focus, only one direction, only one way of thinking. And I find that individuals are uncomfortable with trusting their own intuition. We've relied societally so heavily on looking elsewhere for answers rather than focusing within ourselves. And on a spiritual level, you will change so deeply and so fundamentally. Even my skin changed when I started relying on my instincts and relying on my internal guidance. Wayne Dwyer used to call it the GPS system, right? And I personally went through lots of trauma and so forth. And when I started meditating, when I started trusting myself, which is huge, just the word trust, and then trusting myself, that takes a lot of work and a lot of perseverance. I see people are starting to blossom in that light, but I also see that it's a struggle. How do you guide your students to feel okay with blossoming?
Well, one of the things that we do in my yoga class, I talk a lot about intuition, and you know, I kind of go back to nature. So in nature, if there's going to be, let's say, a major weather event, the animals know it. And we used to know it too. But we've lost that instinct. We've lost that intuition. And I tell people, intuition isn't gazing into a crystal ball, although it can be. But it's not gazing into a crystal ball and foretelling the future. It's about being able to register changes in your environment and connecting with that deep DNA source that says, oh, something's coming. And having the instinct that something is coming, being able to read the signs and being able to protect yourself. I mean, when we lived out in nature, just like all of God's other creatures, if we didn't read the signs, it was the end of us. But now we turn to TVs, we turn to authority figures, we turn to the radio, we turn to the internet. We're always checking in with someone else about what is coming. So our inner sense of intuition is underdeveloped. And even when we get a sense that something is wrong, if there's an authority that's saying, no, everything is fine, we tend to discount our own instincts. So one of the things that I teach people as being fundamental to connecting to the intuition is learning the art of meditating. Now, meditating isn't what a lot of people think it is. You don't sit down, cross your legs, and then your mind goes blank. Meditation is that small space in between thoughts. it's the place where the mind becomes quieter and quieter, and learning to really meditate with an extended level of focus and concentration takes a long time. But everyone can sit down and connect with their breath. And at some point, you'll be thinking breath in, breath out, and you'll have an insight. And then you'll, okay, then your mind will go back to your laundry list. And you come back to it, you're thinking breath in, breath out. And all of a sudden, an instinct will arise. Maybe you'll get the feeling that something's not well with your daughter. And then after you finish your meditation, you get up and you call her and you find out she's been struggling with issues that she hesitated to share with you, but you have this deep instinct. And so what the meditation, the quiet time, the reflective time, whatever you want to call it, allows you to do is it allows that tiny little voice of the soul that gets overruled by the very loud voices in our head to go, hey, hey, something's up. And even in the villages, they had shamans and prophecy mm-hmm. people that they relied on as authority figures. But it was different because he was directly connected into, or she was directly connected into, the people of the village or the people of the area.
Right.
So it was more communal as versus, like, you know, with technology, we don't even know who's talking to us. We just take it for granted that they know what they're talking about because there they are and they're saying something. So there's no personal credibility on the line, which there was with the shamans and the priestesses and the other, you know, mystical leaders in the village. So they were trusted, and it really mattered that they got it right or they were discounted. But we all have some level of that, whether we serve as mystics for our village or mystics for our families. We all have some level of being able to connect into, I call it our inner God self, our soul self, where the heart speaks to us. And when we have an intuition and we share it and we're scoffed at, the desire to withdraw is so strong. But what I teach my students is you have to push back against that desire to withdraw. You have to be able to put it out there. You also have to be willing to be wrong about an intuition. It's okay. It's intuition, right? It's not an exact science. And sometimes you'll think something's coming and it doesn't show up for 10 years, right? So you have to have some courage, and you have to have some conviction in order to do it. And you have to be able to say, no, this is my intuition, and then follow it. And that's hard, but that's what I recommend people do. They meditate, that they act on their intuitions, that they vocalize their intuitions in a safe space to people who can hear them, and that they are not fearful of other people's reaction to their sharing of their intuition. And I think if you can do those things, you can get over the hump.
All right, my friend, this is a great time where you get to have your own little commercial. We're halfway through the show, and I want you to let people know who you are, what you do, and where they can find more information about you. This is your moment to shine.
Thank you, Rusty. Well, my name is Lola Scarborough. My yoga website is yogalola, YOGALOLA.com. And my writer's website is lolascarborough.com, all one word. And I have Facebook pages under both of those names. And you're welcome to connect with me there or to email me at lola@yogalola.com. I also have some videos, in fact, quite a few of them, out on YouTube. I did a lot of eHow videos, so you can meet me that way as well. I do distance healing. I do distance life coaching. I do distance Ayurvedic consultations. I also do distance yoga sessions and meditation sessions. So I do a lot of work by Skype or through FaceTime. I also have my studio, brick and mortar, in League City, Texas. And we do all kinds of yoga there. My specialty is Kundalini yoga, and I've been doing that for 22 years and teaching it for roughly 16 or so now. And, I love everything that I do. I work with women with fertility issues. I work with people on their diet. In Ayurveda, nutrition is fundamentally important, and they have their own system for determining what are the best foods for people. And so I work within that framework when I'm working with people on nutrition and lifestyle. And it's been very successful in helping people with different issues that they come to me with. And I will be writing 2 additional books. I'm going to publish a book of poetry sometime very soon. And then I am publishing an alternative handbook that helps people identify all the different kinds of things that are out there to try and gives them a little bit of information, as well as being featured in an upcoming book, The World's Most Amazing Women, should be issued in December or January. So I'd love
That's
to make
really
connection
exciting.
With
I'm
anyone.
I'm excited to hear about that.
Yeah. I'd love to make connection with anyone who would like to make connection with me.
Yay. All right. So when I was young and spirited, I knew everything. I focused on everything. I could tell everybody what to do. I was the master. And then I became older and wiser, and I learned to be quiet. And one of my favorite quotes is by Alexandra Treffner, and it's something that I live and breathe every day. I read this every single day just to remind myself to keep my humanness at bay. And it's, the best teachers are those who show you where to look but don't tell you what to see.
Yes, indeed.
Do you want to expand on that? Because I think that's really up your alley.
Yes, that's great wisdom. If someone, you share with people what you know, and you share with them what your experiences have been, and then you tell them everyone's experience is different, because it is. When I'm in a classroom and I'm talking to people, I'll say, okay, I'm going to say something, and I'm going to think I understand how it's going to be received. I said, and I am going to be
right.
Dead wrong. Because each of the 10 of you will hear something different, and what I think I was telling you isn't going to be what you hear. And that's perfectly okay, because what you hear is what you need to receive, and it's different for all of us. And, you know, that's a fundamental lesson that I learned early on when I started teaching. I'd be like, well, I didn't say that. That's not what I meant. That's not what I said. But what I learned to do as a teacher was go past that idea, to go into what it was the person was telling me that they heard, because that's where the meaning was for them. And, you know, as a teacher, you're teaching for the student. You're not teaching for yourself. You're there for them. And, you know, it's like I told my daughter, I said, my prayer for you and Dash is that you outdo me by at least 10 times in magnitude. Because if you can do that, I've really done my job as a parent. And I feel the same way as a teacher. You never hold people back by trying to limit what they are, by trying to encase them in your view and to tell them that your view is the right view. It's the only view. And it has to be understood the way you're presenting it, because we're all very different. And so that quote that you just put out in front of me is beautiful. I mean, and it sums it up completely.
Well, and I think we all learn, you know, at our own speed, at our own time, and we have our own path to walk. And sometimes we are so zealous about helping everybody that we forget that to be a good teacher, you have to allow your students to grow in their own way. And sharing that information, just on that high-level overview, hopefully will widen people's perspective on how they treat each other and how they perceive each other. I find in our very crazy, polluted world with TV and nonsense that we are super hypersensitive. We become really even more extreme in sensitivity, and we perceive people negatively more often than we do positively. What kind of advice would you give to people who are really trying to be more in tune with the positive world and disengage from being so trigger happy?
Well, I think one of the fundamental things to know is that we're all in the same boat. You know,
mm-hmm.
we're all in the same boat. And the way we manifest our behaviors is a result of upbringing and genetics and environment, right? But to always remember at the core of it, everyone wants to be safe, everyone wants to be happy, and everyone wants to be loved. And sometimes people who act out the worst are people who have been hurt the most. And you always have to judge, you know, I don't want to use the word judge, that's not the right word. You always have to intuitively feel whether being in the presence of this person is actually beneficial for you or not. If being in the presence of the person is not beneficial for you, then for your sake and their sake, you should remove yourself, go home, spend a lot of time meditating on what it is about this person that has causes you discomfort or rancor or anger or shame, and trace it back to its roots. Thank this person for being a teacher, and really look inside of yourself, shine the light deep down instead of projecting out feelings on someone else. But I mean, there are people who are so toxic that it's not a good idea to be around them because they're going to take you down. So, you know, you look at them, you say, I love you. I know you want to be safe. I know you want to be loved. And I know you want to be happy. I wish that for you. And the feelings I'm having for you right now aren't going to help you with that. And I'm not comfortable being around you. So I'm going to go do my work. I'm going to find out what it is about you that really bothers me. And then I'm going to release it. And I'm going to wish for you that you can be safe, happy, and loved. And I'm going to continue my personal journey. And I tend to stay away from, go ahead, Rusty.
Sorry. I was just going to do a little plug-in. If you're out there and you're listening and you want to call in to ask Miss Lola, lovely Lola, any questions and get a little bit of advice, we're running out of time on the show, but the number here to call in is 929-477-1165. That's 929-477-1165. And I have the chat room open and it's working, so if you have any questions or comments, but you don't want to call in, you're listening to us secretly at work, I know who you are, just give us a little question in the chat room, and Lola will lovingly answer because she is a beautiful soul. In regards to toxicity, my favorite practice is to write down my grrs and my grrs and my rars, you know, and everything that annoys me. Crumple it up and burn it. I think for me personally, that really helps me physically, emotionally, mentally, and visually let it go. What other kinds mm-hmm. of tools and tricks would you advise?
Well, in yoga, there are a lot of different ways you can use different practices to let go of things. One of my favorite is to just sit down and breathe in, thinking breath in at the top of the nostrils, just feeling my rib cage expand, and thinking I'm bringing the life force in, and then exhaling out, thinking I'm exhaling out anything that stands in the way of my life force. And you can name it, you know, I breathe out my anger towards my husband, I breathe in peace, I breathe out anger towards my husband, I breathe in peace, I breathe out anger. And I just sit there with it until I calm down and I come back to a more balanced state. I once read Thich Nhat Hanh is one of my very favorite spiritual teachers. And somewhere along the line, I read something that he said about if you're ever going to be angry, you should be angry on purpose. Meaning you're not angry because you're reacting to something. You're angry because you've decided that it is in the best benefit of you and others for you to be angry at this time. So working kind of with that as a baseline for reacting to anything, whether it's anger or withdrawal or just staying steady and making a choice about the behavior you're going to engage in is really helpful. But yeah, I think writing things down and burning them is a good way of letting them go. I think using just something like a slow, deep breath, breathing in peace, exhaling out anger. Journaling is good for some people. Doing a yoga class is good for some people. Prayer, a lot of times, you know, if you're feeling like the issue is too big for you to handle on your own, calling in your guides and angels, asking them to help you release these feelings of negativity and toxicity. I think all of those things work. Going and doing a really good workout, but also getting to the root of what it is that's bothering you, that's really set you off, is important as well.
I can never say his name properly. Thich Nhat Hanh. I think I screwed it up.
Thich Nhat Hanh.
Ask that one. Call Me by My True Name makes me cry, and I've read it probably 1,500 times. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So gifted. He is amazing. Just love, love, love reading his work. So thank you for bringing him into the show. It was terrific. He's just amazing.
Yeah, I look at him and my eyes water because he's so beautiful.
He is beautiful. And what a soul. I mean, his purpose is definitely beserved. Oh, man. He's done such great work for people. And I could not be more honored to read his work like that with Rumi. Rumi is my long lost twin flame, I swear. You know, he's been dead 5,000 years, but I swear to God, he's my twin flame. I don't know if he's coming back.
Well, you'll meet him on the astral plane.
That's exactly right. Hey, baby, I'm here.
It's so nice of you to wait for me.
That's great. 5,000 years. So I kind of want to close the show up a little bit and wrap it into one of the world's best practices, aside from yoga, aside from breathing, aside from owning your shit, because I think you have to own your shit. You have to get good with it. You're human. Mm-hmm. You're this delicious sack of complex moisture. You know, there's no perfect anything, and that's what makes this ride so fun. And the largest healing tool that I've found in my life is humor. You have to laugh until your belly button falls off. I mean, shit's going to happen. You know, like I said before, I'm a leaf, and I'm going to get caught in a tree, and I'm going to bounce off of a rock, but I'm going to go down that river anyway. So I might as well bounce off the rock going, and trying to play with the rock, and trying to play with going down the river, and trying to play in life, because play is really who we are. That's why when we're born, we laugh, we giggle. Doctors say, oh, they've got gas. I don't believe that. I genuinely believe that we think shit's funny, and then we forget how to have fun. What kinds of things do you recommend your students to do that are fun, that bring up that soul?
Oh. I tell them to go find a hill to roll down, and sometimes in class, I'll say, okay, stand up. We're going to start jumping. And then we just jump and jump and jump. We do crazy little exercises where everyone gets kind of kooky, because I tell them, you know, you have to play like a child, or all you can be is a boring adult. And adults are so boring. They're so serious, man. Let's play. Let's have some fun. Let's dance. Let's be silly. Let's laugh at each other, and they do, and they love it. You know, when people first come into my class, because in the Kundalini yoga classes, there's a lot of play, they'll be like, wow, this stuff is weird. But they keep coming back, and they begin to realize how freeing it is, because we have laughing meditations, we have crying meditations, we have meditations where we lay on the floor and hit it with our fist and kick with our heels to get our anger out. So, yeah, absolutely, laughter is the best medicine. Silliness, like you said, is the best medicine.
I raised my daughter to be very as wise as possible. We don't have cable. I don't do that. I don't fill her head with that stuff. She reads. She has, you know, art scholarships from Ringling. She's very gifted. But she's at this really delicious age of eye-rolling and door slamming. Oh, my God. Mom, you're so stupid, right? Mm-hmm. And it cracks me up. It just cracks me up because she's definitely a reflection of me, so I can't really say much, right?
Right.
What's fun about what's going to transpire in her life is when she's older, like I, you know, in my age range, she's going to really appreciate how much play we had. The other day, I chased her around the house with my Nerf gun, popping her in the bum with it. And she looked at me. She's like, "Mom, grow up!" And she locked herself in the bathroom.
Yeah, say like, never, never grow up.
Never grow up. That's
never
what I told
grow
her.
Up.
I said, "When you have kids, Chloe, you're going to be just like this, honey. And it's the best time of your life because you get to have fun and." Life is not to be a stagnant little potato on the couch. You know, when I was growing up, women in my age group would get their bonbons and their As the World Turns and their house coats, and that was it. Their life was over. And I refused mm-hmm. to go out like that. You know, I'm going out with a cigar. I'm sliding
mm-hmm.
in.
There you go.
And I highly recommend it to anybody. You know, let it go. You don't need a Mercedes-Benz because, shoot, you're not going to take that anywhere anyway. It's expensive maintenance, so let that go. You know, mm-hmm. get a skateboard, get some roller skates, throw on some BDM, get a tattoo, whatever it is. Just go and live and have fun because that's what we're meant to do. We have eight minutes left to the show, and Lola, you are a trip, and I'm just so glad that we touched each other's lives, and I'm hoping that you can tell us a little bit more of who you are, where we can find you, because this is the end of the show where you get to give us your last bit of wisdom and your contact information.
Well, I don't know about wisdom, but I have had a wonderful life. And for me, what I have found to be the most freeing is to believe in yourself. I mean, I just don't think you can do anything unless you believe in yourself and let it be okay to be different. And if the people around you are uncomfortable with you being different, find a different ground to hang in. So that's kind of my wisdom for being yours. Just be yourself and everything else will follow. And I didn't know that for a long time, but now I know it. I believe it. I live it. And my life has so much more space in it. And keep an open mind about everything. You can reach me at yogalola.com. That's my yoga website. Or at my writer's website, lolascarbro.com. Or at my email, lola@yogalola.com. I'd love to connect with you. I do life coaching. I do everything I do. Local as well as at a distance, and we lead international retreats and stuff like that sometimes too, and we lead local retreats, so we do that as well, so check us out. We'd love to meet you, and I've enjoyed you so much, Rusty. Thank you for having me on your show. It's been a delight to talk to you.
It has been my pleasure, and I'm so excited, and I'm looking forward to learning more about you, and hopefully we can do this again later on when you're next. Your last two books are done, maybe three books. Who knows
awesome.
What the universe is going to provide you, huh?
I know. Well, I'm hoping to really get some more of my books out there. And you talked about Rumi, so I know you like poetry. So if I can find it real quick, I will read you a poem out of my book.
I would love that.
I put some in my Fighting for Our Tits as well. So this is about metamorphosis. This is on the last page. And it says, life is about metamorphosis. When we embrace a willingness to change into something new, we become more than we were before, not less. Embrace metamorphosis. It is freeing. And the name of the poem is Woman Moth. And I morph from bee to moth, intent on mission. I fly to the light, beat wings against lantern's cold glass. Frantic, frantic, I penetrate its casing, sighing, flinging, fluttering body into flame. Wings folded, I burn, a woman moth, until the me I am is no more, ecstatic in the fire. So I love poetry.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Brava, brava, brava. Metamorphosizing is part of the course, and I think we do it more than once. I always consider myself as a farmer. I plant ideas. I plant dreams. I plant hope, and hopefully I plant inspiration. And it grows. It grows just like a plant, and that's all I can do. And as a person who's lived many lives already, I think we're constantly in that state of challenging ourselves and challenging our thinking. And I love, love, love having people like you on the show, because you're just another beautiful expression of that challenge. You allow us to grow in a safe and delightful way. And so, Miss Lola, thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you for holding this space, Rusty.
Yes, yes, love bug. And hopefully let's circle around again and do this again soon, because I have so many more questions and time is never in my favor.
I would love to.
Awesome. Thank you, Miss Lola. Have a beautiful day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. You can find more information about Lola down below on the front of the screen here. All of her information is there. And what a beautiful soul. We need more Lolas in this world. I'm telling you, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And you know what? We've got to fight for our tits. Whether you're a man or a woman, breast cancer happens if you have breasts. And, well, you guys got them too. And I actually met a male breast cancer survivor many moons ago who I had on the show explaining to us the importance of men also paying attention to their nippies. Next week, I'm really excited. I love my show. I love what I do. I love, 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 love meeting all these wonderful people. But next week, we're going to get down and get happy with Vernon Brown. Vernon Brown's going to talk to us about the simple steps of becoming happy. And as you all know who followed me over the years, my nickname is HAPPI. Why? Because I'm happy. And Vernon's going to make me happier. Is that possible? Well, you'll have to tune in next week to see if it is. Until then, know that you're loved. Know that you're beautiful. And, well, be kind. Do something nice. Buy coffee. Pay for somebody's toll. Sleep in 5 minutes later. Snuggle 5 minutes longer. Drive 5 miles slower. Look, be well, and keep growing. Love you. Until next week.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.